The closing market report is made possible in part by Justin Wood, Paul Stevens, Tim Smith, Scott Harms, and Mark Soderberg of Archer Financial Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm. You can learn more about the services they offer at 800-637-3123.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for January 13th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at cash grain with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, the farm bill may be back on track as conferees look for compromise on dairy. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports Illinois farmers may find a new weed this growing season, and the folk from Earth Risk Technologies in Chicago will be by with the latest in agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
Let's see how futures settled on this Monday afternoon. Hard red winter May wheat, 6.18¾, down 4¾. July, 6.18¼, down 2. Soft May wheat, 5.80½, up 5½. July, 5.87¼, up 6½. March corn, 4.34½, up 1¾. July, 4.49¼, up 1¾. January soybeans, 13.26¾. They were up 23. July, 12.60¾, up 14¾. January soybean meal, 4.46.90, up $11.70. January soybean oil, 37.57, down 38. And then here are some last trades over on the livestock side. February live cattle, 136.55. It was down 15. January feeder cattle, trading 167.87½, down 77½. And February lean hogs are 85.40, and they are down 42½. And those are your last trades and settlements from Chicago on this Monday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says that Argentina will be dry through Friday of this week, and temperatures will turn hot once again. Extreme highs well into the 90s and over 100 degrees are expected during the middle to latter part of the week. But two weather disturbances moving through Argentina at the end of this week and early next week will bring needed rain to much of the nation. The European model run for Argentina suggests the best rain will fall between January 19th and 22nd. Meanwhile, heavy rain will fall in southern Brazil early this week. The greatest rainfall will be in Mato Grosso do Sul and northwestern Paraná. Brazil's greatest net drying this week will be in Bahia, northeastern Minas Gerais, and a part of Rio Grande do Sul.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt. Hello, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
And there you are.
Yeah.
Before we delve into particular pits, let me start by asking you, what did you think of the overall tone of the market today?
Somewhat supportive. Basically, some follow-through buying materialized after Friday's numbers, given the market some encouragement here. Everybody's brother was fairly negative going into late last week and able to turn the tide there last Friday and kind of break some downtrend lines and hang in there and close higher. Overall, demand remains relatively on the plus side all around, and so we're in a position here, hopefully recorded some cyclical lows here and start the recovery process here. Don't look for a huge bounce, but it feels like the momentum's maybe shifting out of the stock market back into the commodity market here over the short term.
So let's look at particulars. Begin with the wheat market, which, Kurt, has been just beat up crazy over the last several months.
Oh, boy. Technically, you had all the indicators just about at zero there. Only about 2 days of strength ever since clear back here, end of October, it feels like. Overall, world wheat numbers, a slowdown in world demand. No real weather threat, as a whole. Just kept the trade on the defensive. Then we were able to see a little bit of renewed weather concerns somewhat, but Egypt came in and finally stepped up to the plate here and was a buyer of wheat. Saw some unwinding of short side of the wheat spreads too, giving the market a little bit of ray of support here. But Kansas City failed to follow Chicago a little higher. Talk of Argentina approving over 500,000 tons of wheat for export business kind of kept a lid of that and reversed that Chicago-Kansas City wheat spread.
Let's turn our attention then to the corn and soybean markets. Boy, those export sales this morning were pretty stout.
Shipments continue to remain strong. That's what we got to watch in here. Make sure we shipped out what we sold. As we move on down the road, the idea is that we get into mid-February, we'll have to watch real close to see if these shipments continue or if we start to see some cancellations occur. Overall export numbers on the report are, higher, quite a bit higher in some commodities, and so we're just going to have to make sure this export momentum continues to hang in there.
So the shipments was part of the story. Probably dry weather in Argentina until the weekend part of the story. What else can we attach to the fundamental outlook for soybeans on the bullish side?
Well, another sale, 120,000 tons to China. Ideas are they're going to continue to be in there as a buyer. Also, too, there's one of the nation's largest food giant in China was placing bids to buy one of the independent Netherlands trading companies, and I think that's sort of confirmation that China's wanting to be in the world market and continue to have an edge on securing commodities for the country there, Dave.
And on a technical note, if you look at March, we managed to clear the 38% Fibonacci retracement, which we lost last Friday. We cleared it back again today. And I suppose a $13 mark is going to be something that technical people are going to be looking at.
Might as well. We're just about 6 cents away, so might as well see what's above there. If you look at the price chart there, we had support in this $13 level several weeks, during the late November, early December, one below it. So the key is try to get back above it and challenge, the 50% and 62%. Percent retracement is back up, to the upside here as we see if this rally can hold together.
And that 62 at 13.09. Okay, what about the technicals on the corn side?
Same type of scenario here. I think you got to go back a ways to get some good retracements in to the August high because we've just been in a steady downtrend forever here. Ideas are that this March corn can try to see some type of recovery back to this 445, 450 level if we keep the momentum intact here, Dave.
And if we were to see that level, would you recommend that's a good catch-up sale place?
We feel so. I mean, there is some demand in the market. Basis levels continue to remain somewhat firm. But on the other hand, there's still a lot of cash corn that is to be sold out there. Just everybody was pretty well depressed there late last week and feeling they missed the opportunity. And now with the report out, it's giving us a little recovery here over the short term to get caught up on those sales. We feel in order to go significantly higher, we're going to have to continue to see problems in the southern hemisphere in those dry areas that raise some corn. Then, two, in order to go higher, we're going to have to see China come back in and actually, you know, stop these cancellations of corn and DDGs into their country. They are talking about being able to unload some of this questionable supplies, which means if they unload it, they'll probably take it at some point in time because it's kind of silly to load it back up.
40-plus degrees around our neck of the woods today. Do you get the idea, or do you have anecdotal information or other information that cash corn moved today?
Oh, it's been moving. There are areas of saying we've got longer lines than we had at the elevator processor ethanol plants than we did last fall. It's harvest all over again. There's talkies of a shortage of trucks, even rail transportation in some cases in some areas. So we're seeing a huge movement. They want this grain. They're calling forward some sales to go ahead and be able to get it moved in place so they have those supplies, offering free DP. So the countryside is quite active, yes.
What's your expectation for the trade on the balance of the week?
Well, I feel we're in recovery mode in through here. I don't foresee a huge up in through here, but I think the flow of money back into the commodities is kind of taking place here. Instead of a turnaround Tuesday, I think we'll see a follow-through Tuesday tomorrow here and see some strength into midweek. And after that, I think we're vulnerable to some corrections back to the downside.
Thank you very much, Kurt.
All right, take care, Dave.
That's Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
Support for WILL is provided by Risk Management Commodities, presenting a winter planning meeting on Monday, January 20th at the Best Western Hotel and Conference Center in Lafayette, Indiana. Registration begins at 5 with dinner served at 5:30. RSVP to 866-837-9027.
In agricultural news, American Farm Bureau Federation President Bob Stallman says that the current U.S. Congress is, quote, the least productive Congress in history. Stallman called on Congress to complete its chore list for agriculture, including the Farm Bill, water infrastructure legislation, and immigration reform. On the Farm Bill, Stallman says, quote, it is vital that Congress finish the current Farm Bill as soon as possible this month. Congressional negotiators are trying to work out a dispute over dairy programs. Stallman said Farm Bureau would consider almost any resolution acceptable that would get the bill done. The dairy controversy revolves around a voluntary program that would encourage farmers to manage their herd sizes if prices decline. Farm Bureau policy overall opposes supply management provisions. Still, Stallman noted the program in question would be voluntary. Meanwhile, Farm Bill conferees are considering a proposal that would give dairy farmers a choice between a continuation of the current milk income loss contract payments or the new margin insurance program. The plan would drop the controversial provisions that the dairy farmers call market stabilization and processors call supply management. The supply management program is opposed by House Speaker John Boehner, who says he will not bring the farm bill to the floor if it contains supply management language. The National Milk Producers Federation, which represents dairy farmers, did not respond to a request for comment. The United States has notified the World Trade Organization that it spent $4.7 billion on trade distorting amber box farm subsidies in 2011. That's up 13% from the 2010 marketing year. Under WTO rules, the U.S. is permitted to spend as much as $19.1 billion in annual amber box supports. The increase in 2011 was due mainly to a 14% jump in support for the dairy sector, which accounted for just over two-thirds, that's $3.2 billion, of total U.S. amber box spending. A $400 million rise in dairy market loss payments for 2011 accounted for most of the increase. Amber box subsidies for sugar, the second biggest sector by spending, increased by 12% to $1.4 billion in the form of market price support. The United States also reported a 5% increase in non-trade distorting green box farm spending that is exempted from WTO subsidy spending limits. In 2011, the U.S. spent $125 billion on green box programs, with 62% going to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or food stamps. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Farmers in Illinois are soon to find a new weed in their fields. Todd Gleason has more on how the bane of the South is making its way northward.
The question at hand, says University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager, is not if, but when and where Palmer amaranth will show up in Illinois fields. Maybe more importantly, how much damage will it do to the yield of a growing crop? He wrote about it in the Bulletin Online. The Bulletin is Illinois' Crop Science and Extension Outreach webpage. He notes, research done by Adam Davis, USDA ARS plant ecologist at the University of Illinois, has examined these questions. Results demonstrate there are few landscape-level barriers to the establishment of Palmer amaranth populations in Illinois, and that these populations, once established, are competitive with crop species. In other words, these results indicate that it's not a question of if Palmer amaranth will become established in Illinois, but rather when and where it will become established. Well, for the past two seasons, weed scientists at the U of I and at Southern Illinois have conducted surveys, field and laboratory, to determine where in Illinois Palmer amaranth now occurs. It shows up in about a quarter of the 102 counties. All but one of these is west of the Illinois River. However, they stretch from Chicago to Cairo, and the weed is quite likely in many other counties, but simply not accounted for, at least yet. Similar to female water hemp plants, female Palmer amaranth plants produce a whole lot of seeds. These small black little seeds are easily moved within the field and between fields in a whole myriad of ways, including on harvesting and tillage equipment. If a farmer can identify Palmer amaranth in one or more fields, Hager has the following suggestions to keep it from moving. 1. Fields with Palmer amaranth population should be the last fields planted next spring. 2. Mark or flag the areas where the Palmer amaranth plants have produced seeds. These areas should be intensely scouted the following season and an aggressive Palmer amaranth management plan implemented to prevent further seed production. 3. Fields in which Palmer amaranth seeds were produced should not be tilled. Leaving the seeds near the soil surface increase the opportunities for seed predation by various granivores. It's not too early to begin planning an integrated Palmer amaranth management program, writes Hager online. He believes an integrated herbicide program should include soil residual herbicides applied at full recommended use rates within 2 weeks of planting and followed by post-emergence herbicides applied before Palmer amaranth plants exceed just 3 inches in height. Most herbicides that control water hemp also control Palmer amaranth, but successful long-term management of Palmer amaranth in Illinois will likely require a whole lot more than herbicides. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Amy Sage of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Amy.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, on Friends Plaza, right outside Campbell Hall for public telecommunication right now, the temperature is 49 blistering degrees.
Yeah.
Which is 60-some degrees warmer than it was just a week ago. I imagine there must be a line out at the Andersons today.
There has been today. You're exactly right. Sun's shining, and don't even need a jacket, it seems like, after last week. So we've been dumping some grain today for sure.
Has it been almost a second harvest, and are these folk January delivery folk? Are you shaking any more sales free with corn going to 432 or thereabouts on the board today?
We have been, actually, yes. Friday and today, we've bought some old crop corn, so pricing out of DP and also to arrive. So we are seeing some farmers selling on this bounce here, which we feel is probably the right thing to do, given that we're lower percentage sold at this time of the year than we typically are.
Did you have quick ship a week ago?
We did not. We actually, last Monday and Tuesday, we were closed for safety reasons. So, but the processors had some really big quick ship numbers out there. Obviously, they can't shut down like we can here at a rail loader. So there were some pretty high numbers being paid, in fear of people not being able to deliver. So
lots of corn coming in today. What about soybeans?
We are seeing some January contracted soybeans coming in, and people, I think, just wanted to get some out of their bins. But for the most part, it's been corn. Had a nice run here in beans today, up 16 on the close, or 15 and three quarters. Not a lot of farmers selling on this bean rally here. They're still hoping for a little bit more with bean demand where it is.
Maybe producers hoping for quite a bit more or bean demand where it is. Good disappearance. And the shipments this morning were outstanding for soybeans.
Yes. So we obviously saw that reflected here in the futures market. So we'll continue to take that and hope to continue to see some of these rallies, especially once we see South America actually come online here in a month or so.
I actually saw a story this morning that says some harvesting has begun in South America.
Yep, and it seems like things are going pretty well for most of the areas down there. So I'm fearful of what that might do longer term to our old crop and new crop bean market, but for now, with demand strength, we still are seeing the pop. So.
Do you think that pop will, or will the market remain cash firm, at least where it is, for the next several days?
I guess I don't see a reason why it wouldn't. For the short term, I think we're sitting okay here. But again, longer term is where my concern lies.
All right, then why don't you go ahead and give us your full listing of prices for today.
You bet. For January and February corn, we're paying $4.26, March $4.27, April $4.32, May $4.34, July $4.37, and fall 2014 across the scale is $4.33. Cash soybeans for January are $13.06, February and March $12.89, April and May $12.74, July $12.61, fall 2014 across the scale $10.89. Cash wheat is at $5.57, and new crop June, July, August, $5.62.
Thank you much, Amy.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. That's Amy Sage of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. And I'll be back in 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather. It's National Peach Melba Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1808, Salmon Portland Chase was born. He was Secretary of the Treasury under Abraham Lincoln, and later he served as Chief Justice. One of his lasting legacies was leading the court to determine the changed boundaries of state and federal relationships in the wake of the Civil War and untimely death of Lincoln. In 1833, President Andrew Jackson wrote his vice president a letter expressing his opposition to South Carolina's defiance of federal authority. The crisis began the previous November when South Carolina nullified a federal tariff that favored northern manufacturing over southern agriculture. Jackson feared the nullification might split the union. In 1927, the U.S. and Mexico battled over oil interests. The land law, which the Mexican legislature designed to break up the large estates, restricted foreign land ownership in Mexico. The law alienated American oil corporations operating in Mexico and increased tensions between the two countries. And in 1957, the first Frisbee was produced. The pie tins of the Frisbee Pie Company of Connecticut have often been cited as the inspiration for the creation of the Frisbee. A WAMO employee supposedly saw drivers for the pie company showing Yale students how to sail their pie tins, which ultimately led to the invention. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at agricultural weather is Mark Russo from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mark.
Hey, good afternoon, Dave.
Got to say, I love the temperatures, 49 degrees, but I hate the yo-yoing, and more yo-yoing is going to happen, yes?
Yeah, well, certainly it's been about as yo-yoing as you could get here over the past week, with the extreme Arctic air mass of a week ago now to more kind of early spring-like weather here across the Corn Belt. Well, unfortunately for you, Dave, the yo-yoing will continue as we go through the next couple of weeks. Looks like a variable pattern here across the Corn Belt, as we do see temperatures at times warmer than normal, but then that'll be followed then by days with colder than normal temperatures. We do not see at the present time a set pattern, either cold or warm, over the next couple of weeks, but rather this kind of variable pattern. The areas that will be more set from a kind of a standard temperature anomaly will be the western portion of the country, as well as the plains. They will be biased warmer than normal over the next couple of weeks. But here in the Corn Belt, specifically Illinois, expect more of the same here. It is high variability, although we don't see any additional extreme cold moving in, such as what we saw a week ago.
Turn our attention to South America, and particularly Argentina. Hot and dry there.
Well, hot and dry, we think, through Friday into Saturday. So another good heat wave developing across Argentina. But we do see that heat wave beginning to break over the upcoming weekend, and cooler weather beginning to work its way for the weekend and early next week, and that'll be accompanied by unsettled conditions. In fact, we are forecasting a 4 to 5 day window of unsettled weather across Argentina, forecasting about 65-70% coverage of significant rainfall totals of 0.5 inch to as much as 2 inches across the Argentina corn and soybean belt, significantly boosting soy moisture reserves and bringing relief to this hot, dry pattern.
Yeah, meanwhile, Brazil, pretty much what you would want to have if you were a grower of soybeans down there.
Yeah, they've had just fantastic weather up to this point. A couple of dry spots here and there, but nothing of significance. And all in all, we see that favorable weather here continuing. I guess the only item of note would be for some early harvest progress in areas of Mato Grosso. Those areas we'll be seeing at least a return of more frequent rains that could disrupt the early portion of the harvest. That's not of any major concern at this time.
A quick 30 seconds, if you will, on Australia. Interesting weather there.
Yeah, this summer has been southern hemisphere summer. It's certainly been on the hot and dry side across Australia, especially the eastern grain areas, Queensland and northern New South Wales. Also, that area is big in livestock as well. November featured some rain activity, but December turned hot and dry. We saw some relief in eastern Australia last week, and now a return of hot and dry weather for eastern Australia. So they continue to see extreme weather, and that is depleting soil moisture reserves for their cotton crops, their sorghum and barley, as well as livestock there in Queensland and New South Wales.
Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome, Dave.
That's Mark Russo, and he is with Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated in Chicago. And that is today's closing market report. This is Dave Dickey.